Talk Show.
Recorded live.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here with Pastor William Fink. Before I forget, let me just mention that tonight, besides being All Hallows Eve, whatever that means, Halloween as people commonly understand it, that's tonight as well, but it's also Fall Back Night, okay, so that tomorrow's show, which is going to be about the horrors of the Child Protective Services Agency and how they abuse children. Mike, I forget his name now already. I just wrote it down the one time. And anyway, that's going to be the show tomorrow at noon. And don't forget, at noon Eastern time, don't forget to set your clock back tonight. Otherwise, you'll be late for that show, all right? So it's fall back, spring forward. So tonight is fall back. And other than that, I think I don't have any current announcements. And so let's just continue now our study in the book of Acts. By the way, I just want to, for those who didn't have a chance to listen last night, we began a series on the book of Daniel last night. That'll be a multi-part series, and that's on Christogenos. So be sure to check that out. We got as far as Daniel, middle of Daniel chapter 2, and we're going to be continuing with all the tremendous prophecies that are contained in the book of Daniel. So, Bill, how are you doing tonight?
Hello, praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh, okay. So, last time we ended up at Acts chapter 15, verse 30, correct?
Yes, sir.
Do we need to cover any ground here before continuing with verse 30 here?
No, basically we just had the dispute in Antiochia over the circumcision. Of course, there were Judaizers in the assembly then, or probably infiltrators into the assembly, insisting that the – and some of them may have been Judean traditionalists.
Yes,
and
right.
Insisting that the laws of the ritual laws of sacrifice, cleansing, Moses, that those things be maintained.
Yes.
They didn't quite understand the prophecies. I mean, it takes – I'm sure that if all the Canaanites and Edomites disappeared from amongst us at this very second, we might understand. Some of us might understand the prophecies,
right.
and many people would be mad at God because their Jew banker disappeared.
Right.
That's the way it is. And so it was in the first century. A lot of the Judeans didn't understand what happened.
Right. Well, now, of course, circumcision is one of the blood rituals which the Levitical priesthood oversaw or operated under, okay, for lack of a better word. But not all of the Old Testament law was part of the Levitical rituals, okay? Isn't that what James was trying to get at here? That part of what's going on is, I think a case could be made here. Probably have to go over this a little bit more carefully. That James is saying, well, it's not all of the laws have been done away with, just this circumcision and these blood rituals. What's your
take on
this?
Well, once you throw out the rituals, and there's a lot of rituals, ritual cleansings, you have to do this a certain way. And the Pharisees just magnified that greatly.
That's right. That's right.
So, well, once you throw out the rituals, I believe the apostles understood that the rest of the law boiled down to the Ten Commandments.
Okay.
And that if you keep the Ten Commandments, you really can't violate the rest of the law.
Okay.
Except for the food laws.
All right?
Which
okay.
Here in Acts, they only add three things to the Ten Commandments. Not to eat anything that's strangled. And not to eat blood. And there are serious health implications for that probably.
Sure.
And not to abstain from things polluted by idols, and that's a first commandment, you know, restriction anyway.
Right. Okay.
And not to commit fornication, which I believe is a clarification, which I'm persuaded is a clarification of the commandment that thou shalt not commit adultery for a Greek audience.
Mm-hmm.
Because the word that the Septuagint translators used to translate that word, the Hebrew word for adultery, doesn't quite translate into race mixing.
Okay.
They use that just as a general confusion of family lines in cheating on one spouse. I mean, you could cheat on one spouse without race mixing.
Sure. Sure. Yes. So your impression is that, you know, the Levitical law has indeed been done away with, and I don't think there's any disagreement about that in Christian Identity. That certainly is the case. And it seems like they're arguing here, the traditionalists are arguing, that certain other aspects of the law, unrelated to the ritual aspect, must be retained. Okay.
Right. They want to retain the circumcision is the big thing here.
Well, right.
That's really what happened in Antiochia.
Yeah. Now, one of the interesting points about circumcision is that it was instituted before the Levitical priesthood.
Yes, it was, but it's also a part of the law in Leviticus.
Right. Right. Okay.
Even though it's older.
Right.
It's also a part of the same Levitical law.
And it is a blood ritual. Okay, and there's certainly all the blood rituals were done away. The sacrifices. The sacrifices and oblations shall cease as per Daniel chapter 9. Okay, and we'll probably cover that in greater detail when we get back into the book of Daniel. Okay, so certainly the Ten Commandments still apply, and Yahshua restated some of the commandments in the Old Testament, and then he stated very clearly, if you love me, keep my commandments.
Right, and he also said that, you know, the whole law is summed up in do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Yeah, yeah. Seek
and
first
to love,
love
those
God.
Near to you as yourself.
Yeah, seek first to love Yahweh and then your brethren as yourself. And, you know, if you do those two things, you can hardly break the law.
and that word neighbor does not mean somebody who is close to you in locality.
Right.
It means somebody who is close to you in kinship.
Right, right. Israelites. Yeah, we're talking about Israelites, yes. Okay. All right, so that with that discussion, and let's make a point that when we get into the book of Daniel, of maybe discussing that a little more and really nailing down, you know, what laws still apply, you know, because I'm sure that's on a lot of people's minds, okay? So let's get back into verse 30. We're in Acts chapter 15. So when they were dismissed, they came to Antioch, and when they had gathered the multitude together, they delivered the epistle, which was sent, as I recall now, by Paul, correct?
Well, yes, and yeah. it was brought by Paul and several others from James and Peter.
From James, okay, from James and Peter, okay. Verse 31, which when they had read, they rejoiced for the consolation. And Judas and Silas, being prophets also themselves, exhorted the brethren with many words and confirmed them. And after they had tarried there a space, they were let go in peace from the brethren to the apostles. Notwithstanding, it pleased Silas to abide there still. Paul also and Barnabas continued in Antioch, teaching and preaching the word of Yahweh, with many others also. And some days after, Paul said to Barnabas, let us go again and visit our brethren in every city where we have preached the word of the Lord, and see how they do. Okay, let's see if
And see how they hold up.
Right.
In other words, are they staying with the gospel and the message?
Has their preaching done any good? We didn't have the internet to relate, you know, apostasy, local apostasies, as we're seeing today, okay? Verse 37, and Barnabas determined to take with them John, whose surname was Mark, John Mark. But Paul thought not good to take him with them, who departed from them from Pamphylia and went not with them to the work. And the contention was so sharp between them that they departed asunder one from the other. And so Barnabas took Mark and sailed to Cyprus. And Paul chose Silas and departed, being recommended by the brethren to the grace of God. And he went through Syria and Cilicia, confirming the churches. So apparently the contention between them was over, certain aspects of the law. What else could it have been?
Well, the contention was that Paul was upset with Mark.
Well, yeah, but why?
Well, for not wanting to join with them.
Oh, for not wanting to join them.
To put his hand with them to the work of the gospel.
Okay.
That's what verse 38 is talking about.
Oh, okay.
Right. But Paul thought it fitting to bring him, not to bring him along, meaning Mark,
yeah.
who withdrew from them in Pamphylia
right.
and did not go together with them to the work.
Okay.
In other words, Mark didn't want to go preach the gospel with them, so Paul's upset with him and he doesn't want to bring him again.
Okay, okay.
All right, but Barnabas is taking Mark's side in the issue, and there's a division. And I mean, the division is probably affected by the will of Yahweh.
Okay.
Basically. And even though Paul doesn't really talk about Barnabas later on, there is a Mark with him later on, and Paul wrote Timothy, and he's in Rome, and he wrote Timothy asking him in 2 Timothy 4:11, only Luke is with me, take Mark and bring him with you, for he is profitable to me for the ministry. And that's written 20 years after this.
Okay.
Or 15 years after. It's quite a long time after this that's
yeah.
written. Now, I can't prove that's the same Mark, but Mark is also with Paul in the letter, in the epistle to the Colossians and in the epistle to Philemon 1:24,
yes.
where Mark is with Paul. And it may well be the same Mark. But then there's a Mark also with Peter in Babylon,
okay.
which Peter mentions at 1 Peter 5:13.
Okay.
And I think, and Comparé thought so too, that Mark's gospel was really Peter's.
Oh, interesting. Okay. And
that Peter related it to Mark.
Uh-huh. Oh,
it
okay.
seems to be, in several places, written from a perspective that is very possibly Peter's. And there's no Mark mentioned
uh-huh.
in the group.
Yes, yes. So Mark would have been a scribe for Peter, in other words.
And that's a good...
Mm-hmm.
That's a possibility.
As Luke was for Paul. Yeah, okay. All right, chapter 16. Then came he to Derbe and Lystra, and behold, a certain disciple was there named Timothy, the son of a certain woman which was a Jewess. And, of course, here we'd have to take this with a grain of salt, whether it's a Jewish woman or a Judahite woman. Or
she was a faithful Judean
right.
woman.
Yes, Judean.
Which means that she surely was not a Jewish.
Right, right. And so from the context, we have to determine this from the context. And believed, because no Jews believe, but his father was a Greek. Okay, so contrary to what the modern churches teach today, these people were Israelites, because the Greeks were Israelites that had settled in Greece long, long ago. Verse 2.
And, you know, let me say something.
Okay.
In the Greco-Roman world, Timothy was a bastard.
Okay, yes.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But Paul had written to them, and the mainstream churches don't quite take this the right way.
What do they think?
When Paul, yeah, right. In Paul's opening to the letters of Timothy, he calls him a pure child of faith as it was believed.
Okay.
You know, meaning
yes.
that even though he didn't have a recorded genealogy,
uh-huh. yes.
that it was generally believed, because he was half Greek and half Judean, that he would still have been a pure child of the faith.
Right, right.
In other words, the Greeks were mostly dispersed Israel.
Yes.
And except for the Ionians, and we're going to get to them in the next chapter. And the Judeans are undispersed Israel.
Right.
Or not yet dispersed Israel, or,
yes.
or well...
Yes.
The true Judahites
They're
among
the
many.
They're in the process of being dispersed.
Yeah.
Yes. And the Ionians would have been Japhethites, right? Japhethites.
Yes. And we'll get to that in the next chapter.
Yeah.
In
okay.
depth.
Very good. All right. Verse 2, which was well reported, but by brethren that were at Lystra and Iconium. Him would Paul have to go forth with him, and took and circumcised him because of the Judeans, which were in those quarters, for they knew all that his father was Greek. So here Paul actually went and circumcised him to satisfy the Judeans, correct?
Right. And
okay.
and you know, it's not entirely clear why Paul would have circumcised him,
uh-huh.
and it can only be conjectured.
Yeah.
If Paul was not yet established enough in the scripture to realize the vanity of the circumcision,
mm-hmm.
well, that is refuted in the chapter before this
yeah.
when they disputed over the circumcision in Acts chapter 15.
Right.
All right? Now, did Paul do this for political or religious expediency?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Paul wrote in his epistles that circumcision means nothing.
Yes.
But I believe that he did it because Timothy, being half Judean, all right, would have then had access to the Judeans for the purposes of bringing them the gospel.
Right.
Which is more important than your foreskin.
Yes, I could see that.
All right. Yeah, you know, Paul said, to the Judeans, I was like a Judean.
Right.
Well, evidently so was Timothy.
Yeah.
And
when Paul says it is nothing, it doesn't mean that, let's put it this way. I think in other books he puts it, if you obey one portion of the law, you're obligated to obey all of it, right?
Right.
So that if you decide to get circumcised, which you can still just decide to do, as a Christian Israelite, but then, is he saying also that you better observe the rituals as well?
Well, Timothy, concerning Timothy's committing himself as a sincere Christian,
yes,
it's not expected that he would ever violate any other portion of the law again.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, we all get weak
right.
at times, but
okay.
it's not expected or anticipated.
Yes. So in order to either ingratiate himself to the Judeans.
They only want to evangelize the real Judahites. I mean,
right.
Paul makes that clear in Romans chapter 9.
And so when in Rome, do as the Romans, get circumcised. Okay?
It seems to be the reason. There's no other logical reason.
Yeah. Okay. That's acceptable. I'm sure that happened fairly often in those days. Okay. Verse 4. And as they went through the cities, they delivered them the decrees for to keep that were ordained of the apostles and elders, which were at Jerusalem. Now, what decrees?
well, that word decree is actually dogma.
Dogma?
And,
okay.
And it's the opinion. And what they're talking about are those additions to the Ten Commandments.
Aha, uh-huh. Okay.
The fornication, the eating of things that are strangled, the eating of blood,
yeah.
They are the dogmas or the opinions.
Right.
The commandments
right.
aren't dogmas.
Right. Okay.
They're part of the gospel.
Yes. Okay. Verse 5, and so were the churches established in the faith and increased in number daily, not without great contention and disputation, apparently here. Verse 6, now when they had gone throughout Phrygia and the region of Galatia and were forbidden of the Holy Ghost to preach the word in Asia. Now, where are we talking about here?
Okay. I got to talk about this for a minute.
Yes.
Because a lot of opportunists, and Wesley Swift was guilty of this, and so was Bertrand Comparé.
All right.
A lot of opportunists have blindly used this verse to assert that we should not bring the gospel to Mongoloid Orientals. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm the first one that would say that we don't bring the gospel to Mongoloid
right.
Orientals.
Right.
But this verse has nothing to do with that.
Right.
Because there aren't any Mongoloid Orientals in any of this region at this time in the Greco-Roman
right.
world.
And we're talking Asia Minor, which is where the Israelites had been settling all these generations.
Right, and the Roman district of Asia here is the the far western portion of Anatolia, or modern-day Turkey.
Right. And the far eastern portion of the Roman Empire at the time.
No, not quite. Actually, the Roman Empire at the time goes all the way to the Euphrates.
Okay, all right. Well, that would
It goes all the way to the Euphrates.
Okay. Anatolia to the Euphrates. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we still got another 800 miles, maybe.
Right.
You know, that's a long trip.
And I guess the Parthians were on the other side of the Euphrates.
Yes, they were.
Okay.
And Armenia was always disputed, but Rome eventually won it out.
Okay.
But basically, the division, the dividing line of east and west was the Euphrates.
So we're talking about Roman-occupied territory of Anatolia. Or what
well, definitely. And first, you know, Peter wrote his epistle in 1 Peter 1:1, to the strangers scattered throughout Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia,
uh-huh.
and Bithynia.
Yes.
I mean, this is Western Anatolia, and it's the place where all seven of the churches or ecclesias in Revelation are located in Asia,
uh-huh.
in Roman Asia.
Yes.
All right, Ephesus, maybe not all seven, but Ephesus, Sardis, Pergamos, they're all in Roman Asia.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Laodicea is actually in Phrygia.
That's
just outside of Roman
that's
Asia.
That's a good way of putting it. Roman Asia. That's probably the best way of putting it, yeah.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's you know, Paul goes later on and makes a trip to Ephesus, stays there, I think, for 2 years and establishes an assembly there.
Right. Okay.
Now, so Swift and Compere were just totally lame-brained about this.
Yeah, right.
They were. It's crazy.
Yeah. Modern
day. Now, what's going on here is that the Spirit won't allow them to stop in the cities of Asia because, as we're about to find out, it wants them to go to Macedonia.
Okay.
Period.
Right.
That's the only reason.
Yeah.
For some reason, Paul has to go to Macedonia before going to Asia.
Okay.
Okay? Now, I think I know the reason.
Okay.
Okay?
All right. Go ahead.
In Romans chapter 15, Paul talks about having gone to Illyria or Illyrica. Illyrica is the chief city of the Illyrians. The Illyria is the land just beyond Macedonia. Now, this isn't given this, in this account in Acts that Paul went there. We're not going to see Illyria mentioned. But he does state in Romans chapter 15 that he went there, and he has no opportunity in the book of Acts to do that, except for this one here. So for some reason, I believe that Luke just didn't mention any trip beyond Macedonia to Illyria. But Illyria is where a large amount of the tribe of Zara Judah live.
Okay.
They are descended from the Dardanians, who are a part of the dispersion of Trojans after the destruction of Troy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Procopius, as late as the 6th century, wrote about the Dardanians in Illyria, and he explained that the Emperor Justinian was a Dardanian by race.
Okay.
Which means that he descended from Darda.
Right, right.
Zara Judah.
Mm-hmm. That's right. They're Judahites, yes.
So, you know, Zechariah says, I will save the tents of Judah first. So Paul had to go to Illyria before he went to the tribes in Asia, which weren't Zara Judah.
Mm-hmm.
They were Dorian Greeks and Athenians and Danan Greeks.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that? What I'm saying is that Paul had to go to Judah first.
Okay. So, right. Before he went to the Gentiles.
Well, before he went to the tribes of Israel.
Right.
I will save the tents of Judah first.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah, so, and the common misperception is that he went to the Jews. Of course he didn't go to the Jews. He went to Judah. The gospel.
Well, what I'm saying is that the Dardanians were part of Judah.
Right, exactly. Exactly. But they were dispersed Judah.
Right. They were dispersed long before, 1200 B.C.
Yeah.
Is the fall of Troy.
Right.
and they left the land. They left the main body of Israel a couple of hundred years before that.
That's right. It was pre-Exodus, yes. Okay. So in verse 7, it says basically the same thing. After they were come to Mysia. And what's Mysia?
Mysia is a district. It's a district just southeast of Roman Asia. It's above. It's below Phrygia, and it's above Pamphylia.
Okay. And they essayed to go into Bithynia, but the Spirit permitted them not, and they, passing by Mysia, came down to Troas.
Now, Bithynia is actually a land where there were some Scythians still.
Okay.
Dispersed Israelite Scythians.
Yes, yes.
They're talked about, and it's north of Galatia and along the coast of the Black Sea.
Okay. All right, so that's east of what we would call the Asia Minor.
Yeah, it's east of the Troad.
Yeah.
It's in Asia Minor, but it's east of Roman Asia.
Right, right. Okay.
Because, you know, we consider Asia Minor today to be all of Anatolia.
Yes.
And the Romans had it broken up into several different districts.
Yes, yes. Okay. All right, so verse 9, and a vision appeared to Paul in the night. There stood a man of Macedonia and prayed him, saying, or begged of him, saying, come over into Macedonia and help us. Okay, so another vision. We've seen a lot of those in the book of Acts. And after he had seen the vision, immediately we endeavored to go to Macedonia, assuredly gathering that the Lord had called us for to preach the gospel to them. In other words, we understood that that's what Yahweh wants us to do. Verse 11. Therefore, leaving from Troas, we came with a straight course to Samothracia.
And now let me just say that Samothrake is a it's a famous island.
Okay.
And the Greek poets had said that Darda settled there first with the Dardans before they settled the Troad.
Okay.
Which means that, you know, the Greek poets indirectly attest that the Dardanians got to Troy by sea.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's an indirect testimony.
Right, right. Okay, very good. Okay, verse 12. And from there to Philippi, which is the chief city of that part of Macedonia and a colony, and we were in that city abiding certain days. Talking of a colony of Judahites, is that what we're talking about here?
No.
No?
We'll talk about that. All right, verse 11, you missed the part after Samothrake, they went on to Neapolis.
Neapolis, okay. Yeah,
and that Neapolis is the modern-day Kavala is the name of the city today.
Okay.
It's actually about...